Back with you now on The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Last week, my little quarantine pod took a good old-fashioned family road trip. After looking at the same four walls for a whole year, 12 hours in a minivan with kids and dogs managed to feel like freedom. But as we traveled south from North Carolina to New Orleans, stopping for snacks, gas, and stretches along the way, we started to feel like we were the last mask-wearing people in the country. It prompted my youngest, who's 7, to ask at one point, "Mommy, is the coronavirus over now?" I can't tell you how much I wish I could have responded with an enthusiastic, "Yes, don't worry, baby, we're all good." But I'm sorry to report that isn't the case. In fact, the number of new cases per day in the U.S. has doubled over the past 3 weeks. And the overwhelming majority of these cases are among the unvaccinated. And just to make a point, the unvaccinated are a more diverse group than you might think. It's not just about ideology. It's not just about region. It's not just about race or age. So right now, with this new, more contagious Delta variant that is responsible for more than half of these COVID cases, we are in a real situation. And you've been talking to us about this as well at 877-869-8253.
Hi, this is Susan from Vashon, Washington. The spread of the Delta variant is definitely a warning to me that the pandemic is not over. So I am continuing to mask up in public places, also continuing regular hand washing. However, I cannot resist the opportunity to hug.
I'm not as cautious as I was last year, but I still wear a mask whenever I go into a store or a public place. I wash my hands constantly. I try to keep a social distance, and I rarely eat out anymore. It's sad, but I just don't think we're through the pandemic completely yet. This is Barbara in San Jose.
I feel safe from the Delta variant. I'm vaccinated with the RNA type Moderna vaccine. I still mask up when a business or proprietor wishes it to be polite and respectful, but otherwise, I am mask-free. This is Doug in Portland, Oregon.
Hi, this is Catherine calling from Ridgewood, New Jersey. So yes, it is definitely making me realize how much the pandemic is not over. I continue to wear a mask when I enter a public establishment, regardless of what the regulations say. I also continue to prefer outdoor dining or empty off-hour restaurants. It just seems safer.
Hi, this is Mike Rahimi from the Bronx, New York. I'm not at all concerned with the new Delta variant. I have been fully vaccinated since the early part of March this year. I also had COVID 15 months ago. Everything that I've read said that the mRNA vaccines are 94% effective, preventing me from getting a serious case or hospitalization.
Hi, this is Teresa Goodell from Beaverton, Oregon. Yes, I am still wearing a mask. I'm concerned about the spread of the Delta variant, so I'm sticking with the plan. I'm going to go on wearing a mask in public places, and I'm also limiting contact with people from outside my household and close friends. I know people who are immunocompromised, and I don't want to put them or myself and family at risk.
Yes, my name is Michael, and I am in Buffalo, New York. I'm a physician in a high-volume emergency department, and the Delta variant is causing a spike in COVID among people who are not vaccinated, and it's causing deaths. And it's heartbreaking because people seem to think that the vaccine is experimental or it's not approved or, you know, it's been so politicized that they don't want to get the vaccine until they get sick. And they didn't really believe that they could get sick, but now it's spiking back and they get sick and they get very sick and some of them die. And it's breaking my heart that such a disinformation campaign is costing so many lives. It's very upsetting.
With me now to discuss the rising COVID rates and the Delta variant is Emily Martin, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Michigan. Emily, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Okay, so cases are rising in more than half of U.S. states. Can you talk about where the kind of geographic hotspots are?
Absolutely. So we are definitely seeing rises in states like Arkansas is kind of the fastest, the highest state right now, but Tennessee is the fastest climbing. We're seeing a lot of cases in Florida. I think Missouri's really been in the news for high cases and a lot of hospitalizations. Nevada's been in the news, Louisiana. We see a lot of big climbs in southern states particularly as well.
You know, it's when you said Florida, like just in that moment, my knees buckled a little bit because our family was planning our annual August, you know, Florida vacation. And, you know, we have a 7-year-old who cannot be vaccinated yet. And it feels like, man, we're going to have to say again this year, can't do it.
Yeah, this is a big challenge for families of young kids and kids that are too young to be vaccinated. I know, you know, my family, we've got a vacation planned for August with a mix of vaccinated and unvaccinated kids. And, you know, we're going to have to be more careful than I think we were hoping we would have to be.
So talk to me about this vaccinated and unvaccinated. So again, our 7-year-old, that's not an option to be vaccinated yet. So even though the adults in the family are vaccinated, we're, you know, modeling, wearing the masks and washing the hands and all of those things we've been doing for a year and a half. But what do we know about the populations of folks who are unvaccinated?
You know, the national percentage, if you look overall at adults nationwide, we're approaching 70%, which is good news. We need to be higher, but 70% is pretty good. But really, if you break that down, what it looks like is, you know, we've got almost 90% of our 75 and older adults are vaccinated. Over 90% of our 65 to 75 adults are vaccinated. And so it's really, you know, if we get down to the 18-year-olds to the 40-year-olds, so those in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, we're only looking at about half of those adults are vaccinated. And so what we're going to start to see is this concentration of infection in these lower age groups that aren't taking up the vaccine as fast as the older adults. Now, granted, it hasn't been recommended for those adults for as long, right? We prioritize the older adults because they're at higher risk of hospitalization. But, you know, younger adults can still infect children. And so we really need to get the numbers up in those younger groups.
Now, let's talk about Delta for a moment. I was during a family road trip. I had a conversation just briefly with someone at a gas station who said, oh, I was going to get vaccinated, but now that there's the Delta variant, I'm not going to because there's no vaccine against the variant. And I thought, no, I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right. So help our listeners. If you are vaccinated, are you still at risk relative to Delta?
You know, so the vaccine absolutely works against the Delta variant. There may be small differences in how the vaccine works, but, you know, we are monitoring this really closely in groups all over the world, including, you know, my research group monitors this too. And what we know right now, the vaccine is working against the Delta variant. It does spread faster. There's some data that says that it causes more severe infection. And so, you know, the balance is definitely on the side to still get vaccinated against this variant.
If we don't reach the vaccination levels that we want to, sort of in the general population, will that have an impact on the effectiveness of the vaccine relative to this variant?
It won't have an impact on how the vaccine works in any individual person. It will impact the fact that, you know, the vaccine we think is reducing 80 to 90% of infections. So it leaves about 10 to 20% of infections left behind. That 10 to 20%, it's a much bigger bucket if you've got a community with a lot of transmission. So basically, the more disease you have in the community, the more likely you are to have those rare events where a vaccinated person gets infected. So we need to do both. We need to vaccinate and we need to do what we need to do to get the rates down overall in the community.
So let's talk about young children who, at least as of now, aren't able to have the vaccinations. It seems that at least in some places, we're seeing more cases of children getting not simply in the COVID positive test, but getting severely sick. Am I right? Or is that just that now we're reporting on it more? What's going on with kids?
You know, there's a few things going on. Yes, we're reporting on it more. You know, kids are as the highest rate of unvaccination because they're not even eligible. We've got all these unvaccinated susceptible kids. And so that's where a lot of our infection is happening. And so the more infection we have, the more we see these rare events, which are kids getting hospitalized, kids getting into the intensive care unit, having really heartbreaking outcomes. For the average kid, it's not a very high frequency event, but if you infect enough children, then yes, you're going to start to see these hospitalizations.
So recently in Los Angeles County, there's been a recommendation all residents wear masks in public indoor spaces, vaccinated and unvaccinated. Do you think that other cities and states will follow suit on that?
Yeah, I've watched a lot of organizations and local governments struggle with this question because, you know, it's very difficult to figure out who is vaccinated and who is not vaccinated. And if you're having big increases in your community, you know, that's the scenario where a policymaker may want to make this one size fits all recommendation across the board. We have to do something. Let's mask everybody. You know, I know that masking is more controversial, but at the same time, it's low cost. It's not as economically devastating as other measures that people might want to take. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see this in kind of isolated geographic events around the country.
Right. Keep the economy open, but wear a mask, right? Because before we had to all sort of go home, and maybe this could at least keep us out, keep the economy humming. What about schools? So, for example, I guess middle schools and high schools, where most of the young people are of age to be vaccinated, and for college campuses, which seems to fall right in that spot of young adults who you've talked about are less likely to be vaccinated, should they be, and I don't mean this is a political matter, I mean it purely is an epidemiological one, should schools and colleges and universities be requiring vaccination?
Well, if we don't require vaccination, it's very difficult to get from 50% to the 80 to 90% that we need without it. And if we don't get there, then, you know, we don't have that, you know, I know herd immunity is sort of a thought experiment, but we don't have those high levels that we need to be able to slow down transmission. And so the alternative to requiring it means that some schools and colleges are going to be looking at fall-like situations where they may have to take pauses in education. They may have to require masks more than they want to. You know, it's going to be a more complex situation in the fall compared to having high vaccination rates.
Emily Martin is an associate professor of epidemiology at the University of Michigan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.